Hello, this is the Love Letter Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and welcome to another lovely interlude with a story and a love letter. And as you know, every week we are here with some wonderful guest whose journey includes someone to be grateful to, or someone to love, or the desire to say a thank you to someone who has touched a life. And I think we can say that about most of us. I think most of us can say that about ourselves, that somewhere along our lives, someone has touched us in some way and made a positive impact. And that's even as one of our guests one day said, I just want to write a love letter to the bus driver who smiled at me this morning when I got on the bus. It was the worst day of my life, but he smiled at me and I knew things would be okay. Doesn't matter how small or how huge. A love letter, a letter of thank you, makes a difference and so often changes lives. So I'm going to go to our guest today, and our guest is Maurice Woods, otherwise known to his friends as Mo. And Maurice has done something really wonderful in this world. He founded the Interact Project, and I'm not going to say anything more about it, really, because I want Maurice to, but also by day, now this is Maurice's philanthropic life, and by day, Maurice is a designer, a graphic designer with the Studio Heinrichs, right?
Yes, correct.
So I'm just going to go to you. Tell us about you. And let me just invite you first to give, or at any point you want, give your website for the Interact Project and a phone number where people can reach you if they have something to offer.
Okay. So my program is the Interact Project, and the website is Interact Project, INNERACTPROJECT.org. Mm-hmm. And the telephone number that I can be reached at is 510-289-1295.
Okay. So tell us about your journey in general.
So,
because because we're not television, maybe we should just say you're a young man. And I gather you've done a lot in a young life, so.
Yeah. My journey has been kind of an interesting one in terms of me being in a place now where I can actually affect young people's lives. I was born and raised in Richmond, California, which, I've had my share of seeing things, when I was young. And
seeing difficult things, you're
saying. Seeing very difficult things.
Like what, for our listeners?
Well, just I had a lot of friends that have passed away, mm-hmm. We'll say that, and mm-hmm. Have managed to also gather a lot of friendships.
But when you say friends who have passed away, I'm guessing that you're talking about a violent
death. Friends have been killed.
Yes, okay.
I think when I was young, it never really dawned on me that that was really abnormal, mm-hmm. Because I've heard of it a lot, I've seen it a lot, I've had friends and mentors of mine who I grew up with who passed away or were killed, and it was just one of those things where I was just a kid and I was just kind of doing my thing. I had people in my life and then they were gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, out of midst of all of that, I was always sort of an artistic kid.
So what was your home like?
Well, my mother and father were both there.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because they were, my father was a police officer for mm-hmm. for Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was an x-ray tech for Kaiser for many years. And I remember my father was a very strong man. My mother is as well,
mm-hmm.
and they both they raised us pretty well.
Now who's us? Who else do you have?
I have a brother,
mm-hmm.
and I have a sister as well.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother is 1 year older than me, and my sister is I think about 6 years younger than mm-hmm. I am. So she was the baby. So mm-hmm. I was the middle child,
mm-hmm.
and so I had the opportunity to grow up with siblings, one older and one younger that I could sort of mentor.
So you were a little brother and a big brother.
Exactly. Yeah. So, it was a good dynamic for me.
Uh-huh.
So in that terms, it was good. I grew up in that environment. I grew up around a lot of other friends that didn't have that. But, you know, for the most part, you know, my childhood wasn't terrible.
Nice.
You know, I grew up learning about, you know, and having self-pride about who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And also being able to explore, you know, different avenues in terms of sports and arts as well. You know, being young, I used to like to draw and do.
When did that first come out?
You know, drawing came out really. You know, it's funny. It's like when I was young, I really never really understood the power of what I was doing with art. You know, I would say maybe middle school.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, you know, like you remember being 2 years old and going for the pen and paper or something.
Well, no. I mean,
well, sometimes that happens.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. And for me, it wasn't really that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always had creative interests when I was a kid.
Like what?
One of the things I used to do, and my father will, you know, probably won't want me to say this, but I used to take apart all of his, like his watch. He had this really expensive watch. And I remember when I was a kid, I was so fascinated by the watch and what made it tick and what
sure.
made it go that I opened it up and I tried to take it apart and put it back together again.
How'd that go?
It didn't go so well. So my father still to this day, he was like, man, I remember when you tore up my watch.
Sure, the taking it out goes well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the other side.
But just putting it back in, it just didn't.
Good for you, though. That's so cute when boys do that.
Exactly. But, you know, it was like, for me, it was... I think my first sort of adventure with trying to do something creative. I
can't see where parents wouldn't be thrilled with that. That's so clearly a sign of extreme intelligence.
Yeah,
but
you
there
know,
must be some little grain of look what the kid did.
Did he think? Did he think you did it to be naughty, or did he understand that?
I think he understood it because he was mad, but he didn't. He didn't put me on punishment or anything. He was just upset because it was an
he
expensive
ruined his watch.
Watch.
Right.
Yeah, and he was like, "Man, this is my watch, my expensive watch." And so it was more of that more than anything. But I think for the most part, he was, you know, kind of a little intrigued because, you know, here I am trying to take something apart and then trying to put it back together again. And I think there's something to be said about that in terms of.
And by the way, as far as a person who's in design, what could be more intricately designed than the inside of a watch?
Inside
I mean, that
watch.
Probably grabbed you.
But it was just a fascination. It was just like, you know, for me, it was just like, man, this is. You know, a moving, ticking object
mm-hmm.
that is mechanical, and I just wanted to know how it worked.
Of course. So what happened after that?
So after that, you know, it parlayed into really me doing drawing,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I think my parents started to say, whoa, wait a minute.
Oh.
And, you know, I remember one day, I never forget this day, and I don't remember exactly how old I was, but I remember drawing a car.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing it home, and my parents looked at it, and they were like, did you trace this?
Oh, that's the question that people ask sometimes.
Yeah, you know, because they just never seen me do it before. And they were like, did you trace it? And I was like, no, I just drew it. And then from then on, they were just like, wow. And they were so amazed by it. But, you know, to be honest, it was something that I like to do. And it really kept me calm because I was sort of a hyperactive kid when I was young. I had ADD.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always, like, into something. And really, art was the only thing that grounded me and kind of kept me from bouncing off the walls.
How wonderful.
It was the only thing that I would sit down and I could do for hours and just not be disturbed by anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think... just for that reason, parents were like, okay, we're going to give you...
lots of paper.
Yeah, lots of paper.
Here,
just go
and draw.
And so, you know, I ended up doing a lot of that. But, you know, as a kid, you know, and plus my parents didn't really know much about the arts, you know. It's like my mother and father were more more into sports.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the community around me, we were more sports-oriented, music-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't really...
Did people in your family play instruments?
My father played the piano.
Oh, nice.
And I actually played the piano when I was young. I played the drums a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really a fan of the piano,
mm-hmm.
but I was really a fan of the drums. But, you know, my parents got me a drum set, and then...
wondered
you know,
why.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny story is they had got me the drum set, and, you know, I used to bang on the drums all the time. And then one day, the drums were gone. I could never, I was like, where did the drum sets go? And then years later, my parents was like, "Oh man, I'm sorry.
Oh yeah.
We had to take that drum set away.
Oh, you an apology?
Yeah, exactly. He's like, "I'm sorry, son, but it was just killing us so bad. But I was just drumming it so much because you know I was just,
well. Also, that ADD energy, what a perfect thing. For
it was perfect for that because I was just drumming away.
Yeah.
And it was between that and it was between the arts and all that. It was that that outlet for me. That
oh,
really,
but how lucky
think,
you are! So talented.
Yeah, it just really brought it out.
Where did your life go? Like, you're in middle school now. Where did it go after that?
So after that, it really went really sort of interesting for me because. Because I had sort of some problems concentrating, it was difficult for me to be in public school. So I had to end up going to a private school where, and I think it's by a miracle that I got in there because my family couldn't really afford for me to be in there. But we talked to the counselors and the principals there, and they basically, you know, said, "We'll take him on for free. We'll give him a scholarship."
Did they see your art? I mean, was
they didn't
that
see my art at that time, you know, and they just basically just. I don't know what it was. They were maybe my parents' story was very compelling to them, and they felt
well.
Like,
and you're a very appealing person. I mean, maybe they saw that.
I think that's maybe what it was, and they decided it was like, you know, we're going to accept him in. And I actually ended up going there, and so I didn't go to any junior high in any public. I didn't go back to public school until high school. So it was really kind of a weird transition for me because I was sort of isolated from a lot of people. Of course, I had my friends in the neighborhood, but I was really kind of isolated because I was at this private school where, you know, they were really teaching me to be able to concentrate and think. And
was it helpful?
It was extremely helpful.
Oh,
I think it's one of the things that really saved me in a lot of ways because I was I was kind of a mess. I was getting into a lot of trouble.
Oh, you were,
getting kicked out of schools and getting a lot of fights. Just, you know, being a very kind of a bad kid. And going there kind of helped settle me down and get me back focused again. And
then high school was uneventful? I mean, that was...
High school, I was at this school, you know, for like 4 or 5 years. So it's like when I went to high school, I was ready. And, you know, throughout that time, it was really still, even at this private school, it was really about, you know, thinking. I mean, I remember we used to play a lot of chess, you know, a lot of thinking games and whatnot and concentrating games. And I think that sort of helped my art a little bit.
I was going to ask about that.
It really did because I started to be a little bit more of a thinker when I did. You know, I purposely did the art that I did.
Did art play a big part in your high school life?
No, it didn't really play a big... You know, that's the interesting thing about it. It's like, you got to understand, in my neighborhood, it was
It was private.
It was more private. I mean, only a few people knew that I was interested in art. Like, really, all my friends in high school didn't really know. It was only like... You know, like my brothers and my family that knew, and not even
you
all
didn't
my
feel
family.
Like just blaring it all over the place, evidently.
No, I didn't. It was just kind of my own personal thing.
Well, so how did that translate into a career in design?
Okay, well, basically what happened was is that you know I was, you know, I'm 6'10".
Yes.
You know,
I was going to ask who would want to pick a fight with you, but
exactly.
There must be some dumb little guys around, huh?
Well, you know. You know, in my neighborhood, people will pick a fight with you. They don't care. You know, it is like, you know, they don't care.
Yeah,
but
okay.
It was interesting because, you know, it was like I remember getting into design was through basketball, really. You know, art wasn't really a big part of what I thought I was going to be doing simply because.
Yeah, well, so how did you get that first job?
Where? You mean in a.
As design. Was that your first real job?
No, actually, I played basketball.
Oh.
So.
Professionally?
Well, in Europe, professionally.
Cool.
Yeah, for 7 years. And it was really because I went to University of Washington. I got a basketball scholarship there. After my first year, second year there, I was like, I'm not going to make it to the NBA. And everybody who goes there thinks, oh, I'm going to make it to the NBA.
Yeah.
I'm going to be this big star. And it didn't happen for me. I wasn't playing. So I had to make a decision, and I was like, when am I going to do? And I remember me and my mother were looking through a catalog, and that's when the art thing came back. It was my mother was like, I remember you used to like to draw when you were young. Why don't you try something?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, well, I don't know what graphic design is. I've never heard of it before. And she's like, well, it sounds as though they have some art involved with that. Why don't you just try it? And I just went to the class, and I just sat in there not really knowing what it was, and that's how I got into graphic design. That's how it exposed.
So then how did you come to do Interact Project?
So the Interact Project started as a spawn of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, after I graduated, I went to graphic design school and got my undergraduate from the University of Washington in mm-hmm. Seattle. And then after that, I went and played basketball for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And after I was done with that, I came back, you know, to California, moved here for a couple of years, and then decided I wanted to go to graduate school. And that's where the Interact Project was born. Because,
and so what do you do through that Interact Project?
So basically through the Interact Project, what I do is I educate and expose young people to careers in design. And that's basically sort of how my life story plays into that, because I wasn't exposed
exactly,
to that when I was
yeah.
young. And I want kids to be exposed to that, because
so they, you know, that they know they have that choice sooner than you did.
They have that choice sooner than I did. And that's what it's all about. And that's
Isn't
the reason
it?
Why it was started. And that's the reason why it's here today. And that's what gives me so much passion, because not a lot of kids are 6'10 and can play basketball
right.
or have those type of skills.
Right.
So I want them to be able to know that there's careers out there that mm-hmm. exist.
Also, you were talking about you kept your art private instead of blaring it all over town.
Yeah.
I'd have been blaring it all over town.
Yeah.
So this enables kids to be proud of what they're doing,
that's
even
right.
if they're in an environment where it's not so valued.
That's exactly correct, because
it's wonderful.
In most neighborhoods, I think the primary thing that a lot of young people, especially in unserved areas, are trying to get out. That's what they want to do. They want to get out of the community. They want to make it. And they see the quick success, which is today is sports. It's music. It's like, if I get that demo tape, then I can make millions.
If.
And a lot of times, some of them make it, and a lot of times they don't.
Most
they
people.
Say, like, literally, like, the NBA, it's like maybe 1 or 2% of the people make
yes.
it.
Yes.
And so kids don't really understand
and music
that.
To the top. You know, the top is a very small place.
It's very small.
In some of these areas.
Yep.
And there's so much talent. It's kind
so
of
so much talent out there.
So how many kids do you serve? And then I want to get to your love letter.
Okay. I serve, I serve probably about 300 kids
wow.
a year.
So people who, kids or parents of children who have a lot of talent could just call you and say, what do you think? And
that's all they got to do. My classes are free.
Where do you hold your classes?
My classes are held in the spring and in the fall at the Academy of Art University and at Expression College in Emeryville.
You are just a hero.
So there's two
mister.
Locations. If you're in San Francisco and you can't make it to the East Bay, you have a class there and vice versa.
Okay.
So it's every spring and it's every fall. And then during the summer, we have workshops at different community centers all across San Francisco and the East Bay. And all the classes are free.
Thank you for telling us all that.
All of them are free.
Great.
And our listeners should know that you are a recent recipient of the Jefferson Award.
Yes.
Oh,
which
thank
is,
you for
if you don't know, it's kind of the Nobel Prize of volunteer work.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's
thank
how
you.
We found you.
That's right.
Thanks. Yeah.
So who would your love letter go to?
Good question. You know,
I'm going to be writing one to you, so we'll do yours first. Okay, go ahead.
You know, I have been thinking about this,
mm-hmm.
and I think for me, it's hard for me to pinpoint one person because there's a lot of people in my life.
Well, I'm so glad you said that, because we don't purport that a love letter is a one-time deal.
I need to do. I mean, I think all the people that volunteer in my program have really touched me, because they volunteer their time just like I do. And running a program like mine is very, very, very difficult. And we don't get paid to do any of that stuff. We do it because we love to work with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they would be the people that I would be writing to.
And how many, I'm just curious, how many of those are there?
Man, I have probably about 30, 40 dedicated people.
How lucky you all are to have each other. Okay, so that's one group, volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Another group would definitely have to be, you know, my family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know it's kind of a cliche because it's like, you know, my mother and father were always there, which they were. And then my wife, too. My wife is very supportive of me. You know, and I would definitely want them to have that and know that I appreciate it.
Okay, so you said it's kind of cliche. Not at all.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess it's not, but I know that a lot of people always say, you know, parents, you know, help
right.
me through. But.
And a lot of people say that because it's true.
Yeah.
And, you know, the truth of the matter is even if a parent's been a difficult parent, even if a mother has been, you know, one step away from a witch,
yeah.
she's given you something.
Yeah.
And for people who have it in them, and will take the time to write a letter to a mother saying you were always there. And you just said a whole bunch of things about what kind of kid you were and, you know, that you were in trouble and that you saw.
My parents are great. They have definitely been there for me.
Okay, why don't we just write a couple down? Write a couple of things that you would say to your mother, for example. What do you call her?
What do I call her?
Mother, mom?
I call her Rom, R-O-M.
Okay.
There's probably a story there.
Yeah, there's a...
But nicknames and love names are really good. Yeah. So, okay, so what would
and my
you...
my father, too. He's another one.
We're going to do that next. Let's just do a couple of quick, short...
Okay.
I'm going to take notes for you, and then you're going to promise to go home and actually write these, right?
Definitely will.
And mail them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, my parents live, like, right around the corner, so I could...
You could.
Put it in their mailbox.
You could. And then leave, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because reading a love letter is private.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be breathing down their neck when they're reading what you wrote. Because, you know, they might just want to cry in private or laugh or read it twice or not be able to say anything sometimes.
Yeah.
So what do you want to say to your mom?
I want to say to my mom that, first of all, I love her. And that I'm going to try not to get choked up.
You can. Here we go. Kleenex it just for that. Okay. Because we get choked up, too. Mm-hmm.
She's been there for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been always the greatest kid when I was coming up, but... She's always been there for me, whether I've done right or wrong, and has never judged me. And
I'm wondering if it's more than she's never judged you. She's probably always loved you.
She's always loved me. And she's always been there. And I owe her what I am today. Because she is really the one who got me in graphic design.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one who was there, who has always supported me. And she's actually the one who encouraged my family to write the submission to the Jefferson Award.
Oh, so she's always been engine behind
She's always been there.
Uh-huh. She's your promoter.
She's my promoter. And, you know, she's always been a woman who has wanted to see the best for her kids. Regardless of what happens to her, she wants the best for her son. So her sons and daughter. Sometimes it's, you know, we get caught up in everyday life and we don't get a chance to really say, you know, I love you and thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, that love letter to her would definitely be something that would be very, heartfelt for me.
I can see that.
Because I haven't had a chance to really, I mean, I had the chance, but I haven't really taken advantage of really telling her how I feel and how thankful I am for her being there for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. Now, I want to say if you feel like it, or maybe some other letter down the line, that specifics are really nice in a love letter. I'd put a few in this one if I were me.
Yeah.
And, like, what is it you love about her? What does she look like? What does she cook that's your favorite thing? What does she do when she comes home from work that makes you happy? What is the sound of her voice like, or the, you know, the touch of her hand on yours when she's encouraging you, or any kind of thing like that?
Well, I mean, I could be here all, I mean, I think one of the things that she really did for me is just the comfort thing. The way she always gives me a hug, and I can say with her food, I mean, I like all of her cooking.
Yeah.
But she makes this I can't remember the name of the cake. It's like a coconut cream cake. That's what it is. And it's the greatest.
Okay. See, just a little sentences like that. Your coconut cream cake is the greatest. Because sometimes parents are not aware of what you really remember.
Yeah.
And treasure.
I can say one thing. I think one of the defining moments in my life was that time when I got into graphic design and she was there for me. Because it has, I think I have more passion about design than I do about playing basketball. And I played basketball for all my life.
Mm-hmm.
And she helped me discover that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, you know, her pushing me and say, you know, try this, try this, try this. Don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's her personality. That's always been her personality. And, you know, I'll never forget that.
Mm-hmm.
So she
really understood you in a way. She knows you.
Yeah, she knows exactly. She knows all my faults. She knows also when I'm down and I'm, you know, things are not going good. It's almost weird. It's like when I'm in my lowly times, even if she hasn't seen me, she will give me a call and and just kind of know that stuff is going on. It's almost like a sixth sense.
ESP. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's like she knows and she's always.
Okay.
So that's kind of what you mean by she's always there for you, because people say that, and then we always say the specifics. Like, what exactly does that mean in her case?
You know, I think when I say what she has done for me, it's kind of hard for me to say, you know, the label so many, I mean, because there's so many things that she does for me, so many intangible things that she does for me that, you know, it's almost like I can't even think of them.
Well, you know what? But it sounds like the overall is you're getting to is that she pushed you to be your best self.
Yes, she did.
So that's just a gorgeous letter, everything you said here. And then you can, of course, do something for your father and something for your wife. And those kind of specifics, what they did for you.
Yeah.
How they were or who they are in your life.
Yeah.
And aren't they all lucky to have you? My goodness.
I'm lucky to have them.
I know. I could see that, too. Well, thank you so much for coming to tell us the story and do this with us. And
thank you very much.
Yes, Maurice, or can we call you Mo?
You can call me Mo.
Okay, that's great. Thank you for coming. And thank you to all of our listeners for being here. We hope you'll join us every week at this time for Love Letters Live. And in the meantime, we encourage you all to put your loving thoughts into words and to send them while you still have the chance.
Yes, and to take the opportunity of putting your best self on paper.
So good luck to you. Good luck to our listeners. We hope you'll join us next time. So for now, this is Teresa.
And Janet saying bye.
Bye-bye.